From a studio high above the clouds of the Okanagan Valley, this is the Cannabis Podcast. Exploring the world of Canadian cannabis culture, one toke at a time. Now, here's your host and bud tender, Gary Johnston.
And here we go again. Another ride on the Cannabis Podcast. Welcome back. If this is your first time, well, I hope you're going to enjoy the ride as well. We're going to spend the next 30, 40 minutes or so talking about all things cannabis, a plant that I absolutely loved and I suspect you might have an affection for as well. Today, some interesting stories for you. We have a great interview. This interview is with, boy, are these guys enthusiastic about what they're doing, Taser Ray and Ryan Murray. They're going to tell you about Cannabis Defender in today's conversation. We're going to do a quick cultivar corner, and by that I mean we take the Wanna Quick gummies for a test ride. I have a story about a big bust in BC that shows, in some ways, we haven't come all that far in the past 3 years. And we're going to finish with some pancakes for the parents. All of that and more on episode 70 of the Cannabis Podcast. And before we get started, a couple of shout-outs to some frequent listeners. To Jay from Ontario, been a frequent listener for a long time. Thanks for contacting me, Jay. And also JS from Quebec. In fact, JS talked about some Kush cookies, which I have sampled, and I think is going to be coming up on a cultivar corner sometime soon. So thanks for the contact as well, JS. And yes, I did like the Kush cookies. I also want to tell you about an interesting experience we had with checking ID in the store. Of course, any cannabis store in the country, depending on what province you're in, has to check for IDs. In BC, you require two pieces of ID, and that person must be at least 19 years of age. So we're going to ask if you do not appear to be anywhere close to that age, especially if you come into the store and you're wearing some pajama pants, and you're already giving an indication that you might not be old enough. Well, it's not going to get easier. And this one particular time, I was in the back watching the cameras. It had been going on for a long time, so I went out onto the floor to see what was taking so long. And here's the way the conversation was going, and it was very circular. It basically involved about two questions and no answer, and it was like this. In order to be in the store, I need to see two pieces of ID. But my friend was here earlier. That's all well and good. Your friend may well have been here before, and I assume we asked him for ID. But how is that relevant to you needing to give us ID? But my friend was here before. I'm serious. This is the circle we went around and around until finally I had just had enough and said, I'm sorry, if you can't produce any ID for me now, I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store. And he turned around kind of in a little bit of a huff and said, well, I probably won't be back to this store then. Well, good luck with the line about, well, my friend was here earlier. That should suffice for my ID. You never know what you're going to run into in a cannabis store. Taser Ray has had a very interesting and diverse career. I'll let him fill in the details for you. But our conversation today is about his eureka moment. When he took his expertise and turned it to the cannabis world, he found a way to activate dormant programs in the cannabis plant genome, creating all kinds of possibilities. His partner in the venture, Ryan Murray, is an award-winning grower who loves everything about the cannabis plant. The code Taser cracked has resulted in Cannabis Defender. And today, a first on the Cannabis Podcast, a dual interview, as I talk to both Taser Ray and Ryan Murray. We pick up the conversation when I ask Taser to give me some background.
I spent about the last 35 years as a researcher, and I began that in wildlife research, where we were chasing grizzly bears and caribou around in the mountains. And that had actually one noble thing I used to do was bring 25 to 30 pounds of grizzly poop down the mountain. That must have been
fun.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, life got better. I got into water quality research and technical sciences. And that got me into working with different kinds of resource extraction people and where I was looking after the maintenance of watersheds. But it also got me into learning a lot more about the micro world at the same time. And then that morphed into doing naturopathic studies. And I spent some time at that and working out of a clinic out in Saskatoon. And that got me into a lot more deeper understanding of how the human biome works and immune systems work. And then I got the opportunity to go to Hawaii to manage a retreat facility. And while I was down there, that's what really got me going, because that was my eureka moment, where basically one day a chiropractor friend of mine, David, came by to visit. He wanted to look into what I had been doing all my life and some of my accomplishments I've done in creating new solutions for the human health challenges. Yep. Anyway, Dave and I are sitting at the table on the deck, looking out on the jungle. And David looks at me and says, "Have you ever thought about making a mosquito repellent?" And I said, "No, sounds interesting." And that set me on a path, basically, over the last 11 years of creating some interesting things. Because what I learned at that time was this ancient tech that allowed me to communicate not just with the human biome at the cellular level, but also with plants and animals, I guess, with these organisms.
Okay.
So that's sort of where I'm at. I mean, what I learned how to do was, and even more crazy, was communicating with the fungi kingdom. And now the cannabis plants as a host community, how to get them to be optimized. Because what happened back in 2015, when I came back to Canada, people had seen what I'd been able to do in the coffee industry and whatever else I was doing. And one person asked me at that time, "Could you come up with something to stop the spider mite from attacking cannabis plants?" I said, "I don't know. I'll look into it." So I did, and I found a couple of really good research articles, one out of the Netherlands and one out of Germany. And they showed that the cannabis plant had the ability to protect itself with a couple of these fungi that are housed within it. They're called symbiotic fungi. They actually live on the plant. Here's a big name: endopathogenic fungi, which means they attack bugs. And so these are actually already resident in the plant. And what I learned how to do is activate that part. Here's what happens. This is what's kind of interesting. So this is for the spider mites. When a spider mite comes in to bite a plant, okay, goes to the underside of the plant, takes out some sap. Well, what has happened once this cannabis defender has been introduced to the plant, it gives these instructions to the plant to do a host of things. So one of them is to release these spores into the leaf tissues. So when the spider mite bites into the plant, it takes in some of the sap. These specialized spores go into the spider mite. You've got to remember, the spider mite's really small. And it starts to consume the spider mite, takes out useful minerals, transports them back to the plant. The spider mite's basically sucked dry, falls off the plant, over, done. Game over.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, very, very cool. And that's why we're having this discussion today. So I want to bring Ryan in to the conversation. Yeah. Ryan, give me a sense of your background and what brought you to this moment.
Well, I grew up in a farming family and pursued an education in botany. And I don't know, I just have a passion for plants.
Okay.
As my brother turned 21 years old, he got sick with testicular cancer. And the only thing that really saw us get through that, or helped him get through that, was the use of cannabis. And sort of from that day forward, I took a passion in this plant and the medicinal aspects of how it truly, genuinely helps people in a million different fashions. We can talk ailments, specific ailments, we can talk general ailments. And my passion continued to grow throughout that time. I was a master grower for a few different companies, one out of Saskatchewan, two out of Edmonton. Just continued to drive an interest in this plant being basically medically driven. And, you know, so I became a breeder. Yeah. And throughout my time, I've won 7 awards. Of those awards, there's 3 strains that I bred myself. And yeah, there's
very cool.
It's probably one of the most beautiful plants on the face of the planet, and it's a really enjoyable plant to grow. So.
And enjoyable plant to use.
That too.
Exactly. And that was going to be one of my questions was, you know, is your interest in the cannabis just botanical, or do you have some personal interest? And you both kind of answered that question there. So that's cool. So just to give everybody a sense of where we're at and what we're talking about, I was originally approached by Taser's brother, Kurt, to talk about what's happening with this. And this is some of the information I was given. The Growing Summit 2021 is going to be virtual this year. And these guys are going to be presenting at it. They had their document reviewed. It went through, got accepted. So the summit is actually the 26th through the 28th.
Right.
You guys are on the 27th, I believe.
Yep.
And you're one of four chosen out of the many that applied. And what they're presenting is a presentation called Cannabis 3.0 Cracking the Code for genetic upgrading, which increases yield, develops natural resistance to environmental threats, all done naturally. Now, you kind of gave us a tease there, Taser, as you went into your description, and you can hear the passion in both of your voices about what you're covering and your passion for the plant. But let's take it back to the sense. So what is Cannabis Defender? What does it do and will it do for the average person growing cannabis?
Okay, well, I'll give a little bit of science and I'll let Ryan talk about what goes on in the grow.
Sure.
So what is Cannabis Defender? It's really optimizing the environment for the cannabis plant to grow. What I've been able to do, like I was saying, is our product isn't so much, it's not a fertilizer. That's what some people, because that's all they really know. It's actually a communication tool. What I learned how to do was put communication directives into the organism at the cellular level to get them to do stuff. Because this isn't my first rodeo. I've actually created some other interesting things, even the ability for the human being to absorb sunlight and convert it directly to energy. This is still pretty, this is really cutting edge stuff.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like there's nobody has done anything like what I've done. And like I said, I've got the last 11 years to show all these different things that I've been able to create that are along the same line, work from that foundation of the mosquito product that I created then. That it's communication and it's getting plants to open up in the genome. This is what the genome we call cracking the code, because there's programs within the genome that aren't switched on. Here's like a little bit of information. Some people just don't know, and I didn't know this until a while ago. Like people have heard about the human mapping the human genome, okay, the DNA, and they say that there's, I don't know, let's say roughly 80% of it's junk, 80, 85. They call it junk DNA, which people understand that now is that that's not really true. It's just the stuff that hasn't been switched on. Well, here's one thing that a lot of people don't even have a clue about. Plants also supposedly have junk DNA. Did you know that?
No, I had no idea, no.
I had no idea either. So I thought, this is pretty remarkable. So the things that I've been doing was accessing the genome, and there's things in there that can be switched on. So this is what I found out how to do with plants also. So it had these natural protection abilities within it to be switched on. It also had a natural ability. This is another thing Ryan can talk about, is I found another way to switch on the ability for the plant to absorb green light. Basically, it can absorb the middle band of the visible spectrum, and you change the chloroplast. It actually restructures itself, and it absorbs more light. That's also something nobody's ever been done before. So this is like pretty cutting edge shit, right?
Yeah, it sure is.
So anyway, okay, well, Ryan, maybe you could talk a little bit about what you've experienced with the plants with regards to that. When it's got extra energy, it's got bigger families, it's got a lot of stuff that, go ahead.
Well, I guess first and foremost, the lab results told me it produced a better product. When we did one of the first side-by-side runs, we increased a CBD strain that contained about 9 to 10% THC and about 8% CBD to about 14, 15% THC to 12, 13% CBD. So right there, just in that initial test, it showed that we got better results in the outcome flower. As far as the
Oh, weight too.
Yeah, I mean, we increased the weight on the same pheno, so it was a good run.
Yeah.
As far as the garden is concerned, I took an overgrown garden to create really, really healthy plants. And in most cases, an overgrown garden, you get the opposite results.
Okay.
Plants start fighting for light. Plants start fighting for space. And these plants just happened to, they all got along. They all got a lot happier and healthier.
Nice.
The families, the size of the initial family almost doubled in size. Anytime families get bigger, that just means that they're able to absorb more energy and absorb more light. So it was really good results. I also had a little case of thrips within that first trial run. And by the time I transferred over to flowering, there was no thrips left. They had basically said that we're not happy in this environment, and they disappeared. So I know Taser likes to say they ate them, but they definitely vanished, and they went and found a new environment to a new host plant, and yeah, my garden wasn't there. So it was a good first run.
Well, one thing you tell them about also is what you've noticed with giving them extra light now that wasn't before.
Well, as I've continued to use the product over the last year and a half, 2 years, I guess now, I've had zero bugs, zero, any, absolutely no problems within my tent. And I've actually been able to increase my tent in the max flowering phase between weeks 3 and 7 to over 80,000 lumens. And on a traditional flowering stage that late, probably looking at about 65,000 to 70,000 lumens. So I've increased the amount of light and actually generated zero deficiencies. The plants aren't by any means stressed out because of it. And in most cases, something like that would cause some bleaching, some sort of discolorations and funny things that you don't really want to see in a grow at that stage anyways. So the plants really do seem to like this product, and yeah, makes gardening fun and easy.
Now one of the things that was in the documentation you sent me, Taser, was talking about the fact that you're using these dormant or inactive genome programs to kind of tater different profiles of THC and CBD. Can you give us a sense of how you're turning on those various things to achieve that?
Not without you signing an NDA.
See, I knew that was going to come at some point. And I appreciate that. No, I totally get that.
But basically, as I was saying earlier, what I've learned how to do was to basically get things turned on. Like I said, it's a communication tool. It's kind of like I stumbled across, what's it called? The something stone they use in languages.
The Rosetta Stone?
The Rosetta Stone, yeah, for the fungi kingdom. Anyway, being able to communicate certain directives to them that are of benefit to everybody within that community. Because this is the thing that I think people sometimes forget. Yeah, they're looking at the cannabis plant as a plant, but it's not just a plant. It's just like us. It's a host. It's a host for a community of organisms that need to get along well, right? So you have to take a look at a holistic way. Like when every time you're throwing things onto the plant, you're basically throwing it onto a community.
yeah, true enough.
You better think a little bit about what you're doing so to make sure that the whole community is benefiting, or else. And that's the thing. When you're doing things that benefit the whole community, well, guess what? It all flourishes. And that's what you can see. And so that's what I've been able to figure out anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you see this being something that's going to be very, very useful to growers like myself and in the home environment?
Oh, yeah. Well, as Ryan has said a while back, you know, it can make a home grower into a master grower pretty quickly, because there's a lot less things that have to be, what do you call it, Ryan? Like there's less time, less maintenance that you have to do.
Less worry of introduction to problems.
Okay.
I I've always been a believer that a healthy plant and a strong plant can withstand the environment. If we take a look at a plant outside, they don't get the beautiful cover of a greenhouse, and they don't, but they can withstand bugs and problems and issues if it's a healthy, strong plant. And what we do in contained growing or indoor growing is we don't introduce all of the other elements to, we baby plants and
nature.
Basically what I think we've been able to establish is bringing nature indoors, creating a system that works together and doesn't have any issues. And I noticed just stronger, generally healthier, happier plants. And when we have healthier plants, we have healthier yields. We have less issues from an LP world and a massive production standard. A product like this can drop down the amount of IPM problems, the amount of biologicals that I would need to be introduced into a garden of that size, and generally just create a better program of an indoor growth. So it really is a neat product.
On the root structure, looks very much like mycelia from fungus. They really extend into the whole, if you're in a bucket of some kind, 3 gallon or 5 gallon, it becomes, I don't know, it kind of fills it up. It really maximizes its ability to absorb. Right, Brian?
Yeah, very much. I have root-bound plants in every stage of my growth. I have to transplant on a fairly regular stage just because I do grow indoors as well. And it's a space thing, but I've never had an issue with any root problems, diseases, or anything with once I started using this product. I actually end up using more fertilizer because the plants are driving for every aspect, every little bit of available nutrients. It's taking, it's using, and it's generating energy from it. So again, with more inputs, we get better results.
We jokingly say, when the plants are starting to get into full production, don't walk by them with a ham sandwich. It'll be gone.
In reference to the fact that they are eating everything. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's and very cool.
Yeah, don't cut yourself while you're around them.
So you're presenting at the virtual summit. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's great because it's being able to share this cutting edge stuff with a lot of people that just don't know about it. I mean, it sounds a little sci-fi, but the thing is, I've been working with this for quite a while. I mean, my first crack at it was with the coffee industry down in Hawaii, where they asked me then to come up with a way to stop this coffee berry borer beetle from attacking the coffee tree, or I guess actually the coffee bean. And when I looked at it, it sort of looked at the same thing, like in a holistic way. Well, why is this happening, you know? And currently, as you know, with a lot of agriculture, they throw a lot of pesticides around, but with this, it wasn't really very effective, because once the beetle goes inside the cherry of the coffee, she's home free. But what I did find out is that she needed two particular alcohols that in order for her to reproduce herself. So I got the tree to stop giving her the alcohol, and she basically either died on the cherry or flew away.
Ah.
We had coffee farms go from like 85% infestation to just virtually zero within, you know, 3 weeks to a month. It's pretty amazing.
Pretty darn amazing. I was fascinated when your brother sent the information to me, and I read your presentation overview, and thought, wow, wouldn't that be cool if we had cannabis plants that can eat bugs? And in essence, I know as Ryan intimated, they're not actually necessarily eating the buds, but they are certainly taking care of them for you. Very fascinating stuff, guys.
Well, this is the thing. It's a natural process.
Yeah, you're just reactivating it.
Yeah, if you look into the fungal kingdom, I mean, fungus attacking bugs isn't out of the ordinary. I mean, but once again, this is a process that helps the whole community, remember. everybody benefits within the community. So it's a good thing to do. And it uses very little energy. And the other thing is, if you take care of the problem when it's just a one mite, game over, done. No reproduction, right?
Yeah. Very cool. Excellent. Well, good luck with the presentation. Good luck with the Cannabis Defender is the name of the product?
Yeah, Cannabis Defender. We're on our Fat Beaver site, fatbeaver.com. That's where you can find out more about us.
Okay.
And that's where we're kind of like having a bit of a sort of a Galen, or no, General Ray's War on Bugs. It's actually quite funny. We've got a bit of a military theme to it. We want to make it a little bit humorous and fun to be part of, because it's really a movement. Our movement is to have 1 million bug-eating cannabis plants, out there eating all these bugs.
That's an enviable goal.
Well, yeah, we want cannabis patriots. We want people that love the cannabis and are true blue cannabis lovers, right?
Well, you're preaching to the right crowd. Most of the people who are listening to the Cannabis Podcast are of that opinion of cannabis. So you're definitely preaching to the right crowd, guys. So let me hit you with my hot seat questions. And you can both take your turn at answering them. So a favorite cultivar?
Okay, for mine, I don't really have a favorite, though one of Ryan's Black and Blue I have some fond memories of.
And Ryan?
That's a tough one from a breeding side. I definitely old school. I've got probably my Cali Mist is one of my favorites.
Nice.
The traditional Acapulco Gold.
Uh-huh.
Those are two really nice sativas, dominant strains that I really prefer. My Black and Blue Kush, which I bred and has a second place Indica Award. It's definitely one of my favorites. It's very, very
velvety,
appetizing. It tastes and smells just like fresh blueberries and has a really, really nice appeal to it. So,
you float on clouds.
those are a couple of mine, but I have a really long list, and
I bet you
continue
do.
To name genetics as
I bet
the
you do.
I like.
And so, since you raised it, Ryan, let me give you the opportunity to give the other two prize winners that you had.
The other prize winners that I have is a strain called Davy Jones. It took a sativa award. And another one that I've really enjoyed is I've done some work with a pineapple chunk, and that pineapple chunk has a really, really nice tropical floral flower smell behind it. Almost tastes like pineapples, and has a really, really nice uplifting energetic high.
Oh, very nice.
A lot of the strains that I like to work with are sativa dominant. Okay. I'm not a huge coach lock guy.
Okay.
I like to get out and get doing things, and that's where I really choose the sativa line.
Oh, very cool. Okay, so next question, flower or vape? Joints or vape?
Joints or vape. I'm a pipe guy, water pipe guy.
Okay.
I guess I'd have to fall into the joint category, but I'm definitely more of a blunt person. Okay. I enjoy a nice wrap of a leaf.
Yeah,
instead
nice.
Of the paper.
Yeah. We just heard we got a new blunt coming to the market next week
cool.
or so. So we'll check that out. Okay, a favorite munchie?
Oh, wow. Cheesies.
Have you ever spent any time in Arizona?
Yeah, often I. Why?
The reason I ask that is my brother and a number of other people have, and that's they love to take their Hawkins cheesies down to Arizona with them because you can't buy them there, apparently.
That's right. Only in Canada.
Yeah, a bit of a sidebar, sorry. So your favorite munchie, Ryan?
Probably nachos, really. I really enjoy a nice plate of nachos.
Okay. Edibles or flower?
Kind of both, but definitely brownies. I mean, I used to make brownies. Actually, we had a little sidebar here. When I was down in Hawaii, we were sometimes selling stuff at the farmer's market, and I would make these chocolate chip special cookies. It was like the regular ones and then the special ones, right?
Of course.
And but what was funny is when people come to buy them, I say, well, these ones are, you know, whatever, and these ones are the special ones, right? And he said, well, I want the special ones. I said, well, how much are the special ones? I said, well, same price. What is it, a buck or something? He said, why is it the same price? I said, because it's a cookie. Enjoy it. They loved it. I mean, it was so funny because they always thought I was going to charge more, but I didn't because I wanted people to enjoy them. You know, it wasn't about the money.
Yeah, that's true. And now the next question I have is kind of a localized question. Ryan, you're in Saskatchewan, are you?
I'm just outside of Edmonton.
Okay, and Taser, you're in BC?
Yep.
Okay. What do you call 3.5 grams?
I'll let Ryan answer that one.
A blunt.
That's the best answer I've heard to that question, Ryan.
Okay, well my answer,
that would be an eighth, but I like to use that for a blunt.
Okay, well, you know what I call it?
What?
Not enough.
That's another very creative answer to that. Yeah, perfect. All right, gentlemen. Well, thanks very much for all the information on Cannabis Defender. You're obviously pretty excited and passionate about what you do. We will leave it there, and you enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Thanks a lot, Gary.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. THC, CBD, terpene profiles, what's in me? Oh, please explain to me. Cultivar Corner, Cultivar Corner, oh yeah. Cultivar Corner, please explain this stuff to me. We've talked about them a number of times over the course of the last couple of episodes, and it's time to actually put them to the test. So we're doing that right now. I'm talking about Wana Quick. And the quick part of it is the fact that they're keeping the THC at Delta 9, wrapping it in these lovely little wrappers that make it more available to our bodies, in other words, making it water-soluble. And that means we can absorb it, and they say, 15 minutes. We'll see. They have three different types. They have pineapple, coconut, orange peach, strawberry lime. Strawberry lime is a 1-to-1 CBD and THC. The orange peach is their sativa version. And I love the way they phrase it. They say, Wana Quick Orchard Peach Gummies, ripe with juicy peach flavor and infused with 10 milligrams of sativa-enhanced THC distillate per pack. Well, it's actually the pineapple coconut indica that I have in front of me. A Wana Quick Pineapple Coconut Gummies, a tropical treat infused with 10 milligrams of indica-enhanced THC distillate per pack. And what do they mean by that indica or sativa-enhanced? It means that they have added botanical terpenes based on the ratios that they determined occurred in certain sativas and in certain indicas. And that's how they came up with a ratio for their pineapple coconut indica. 5 milligrams per piece. Now, to give some context, I had originally given these a try at one at a time. I tried one, waited 15 minutes, got a bit of a buzz, and then decided to try the other one. But you know what? We are going the opposite direction today because I already know that I have a fairly high tolerance, so I'm popping them both. And you're along for the ride. Now, obviously, I'm not going to sit here for the next 15 minutes and chat at you. So I'm going to consume both of these. And the interesting thing is, as well, from Wana's perspective, they, of course, have their sour gummies, which are more the traditional, go through the liver, turn into 11-hydroxy-THC. And those are square-shaped. These are, I think rather appropriately, Delta 9-shaped. They're little triangles because the THC remains at Delta 9. Their whole idea is they're going to give you a smoker's high, but through an edible and in about 15 minutes. So I'm going to give these a chew. I mean, there you go. Good flavor. Now made with pectin. And again, up to 30 additional terpenes. Botanical terpenes. And I am a believer that a terpene is a terpene is a terpene. It's the terpene molecule that makes it that terpene. And whether it's from a fruit or cannabis, it's the same terpene. So that first one tastes pretty good. So just consumed a total of 10 milligrams of THC. Now I start my stopwatch. And we start counting. And I am going to be a good boy. And I'm not going to smoke a joint in the interim. I will literally wait until at least the 15-minute mark. And if I start to feel anything, I'll pick up the recorder and we'll see where we go from there. But that's where we are right now. And here we are, 15 minutes later. I was hoping I was going to say, wow, I am just blasted. But alas, what is it with me and edibles? I was really hoping that these were going to give me a bit of a... And I feel much the same as I did after I took one. There's a bit of a buzz there. It's not like it didn't impact me at all. But it sure didn't get me stoned. Maybe I'll give the sativa ones a try and do all of them. I'm a persistent bugger anyways. And unfortunately, that's what I had to report with the... Want a quick gummies. Now, if it miraculously evolves into something deeper, I'll throw the recorder back on and update this. But as it stands right now, this wasn't the Delta 9 solution in an edible that I was hoping for. And we are thankful to Mugglehead Magazine, mugglehead.com, for the next story. And this is the reference that I made at the beginning about we haven't come all that far in the last 3 years. Salmon Arm RCMP sees 1,600 cannabis plants from an unlicensed grow. The Salmon Arm RCMP executed a search warrant under the Cannabis Act in Sorrento, B.C. on Tuesday at an unlicensed cannabis growing operation, said a B.C. RCMP spokesperson. Two men were arrested and released for court in the near future, E-Division Senior Media Relations Officer Sergeant Janelle Choette tells Mugglehead in an email. Confirmation of the enforcement comes amid reports of increased police presence in the region and rumors in the community that a number of warrants against growers are incoming. Police seized over 1,600 cannabis plants and Canadian currency, Choette says. I'm not aware of any planned enforcement in the upcoming days, she said. However, as you know, we may not be notified in advance of such enforcement taking place. And what this reminds you of is way back when, just over 3 years ago, when cannabis was still not legal, and this was happening all the time. And the problem that I have with a story like this, and there was a lot of talk on Reddit before this bust actually happened, and the problem I have is that many of these growers, obviously, this is where the black market is still getting a lot of their supply, is from all of these unlicensed grows that have nowhere to send their product other than to the black market. But if we made the avenue from the illicit market into the legal market easier and allow these growers to come into the legal world and sell this weed to the rest of us, we wouldn't have to have these stupid bust for cannabis plants. It just infuriates me. It truly does just infuriate me. So keep your eye on that one. We'll see if that story develops into anything more than that. And I want to leave you today with another story, actually probably very close to the same time frame as the one about when I talked about my wife having to go to emergency with the giggles. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was the same time frame because we were living in the same place. I can envision the kitchen of where we were living. I have also made reference to the fact that back in those days, and this would have been in the mid-70s, I guess, weed in the Kootenays was pretty well homegrown, and it was mostly leaf. It didn't have time to get to bud in an outdoor grow just simply because there wasn't enough time before the snow came. So there was a lot of, and I'm sure that, you know, we got high on it, so it wasn't like it didn't have any value. But it was a lot of leaf, and so we ended up, when you would get a harvest and you'd bring a bit of weed home, you would often kind of chew it up in the blender. I know today that just sounds horrid, but that's what we did. And I had this one particular friend who I had to grow out by the ferry, I think up by Balfour. And I had gone and I picked up, I can't remember how much, came back and we decided we needed to process it in order to put it away because the leaves would dry out if we didn't do anything with it. So we processed it in the blender and ended up with a number of jars of weed all ready to roll. Kind of, you know, kind of like tobacco, ready to go in here by our jars of weed. And it was, I guess, we had done this one afternoon, and that evening my parents came over to spend the night and have a visit. And I never thought about it. Never thought about it at all, because, you know, back in those days, again, cannabis was not legal. So we did not be up front, although my parents knew that I smoked pot. Back when I got busted as a juvenile, that might have been their first indication. But anyways, I digress. I had forgotten that they were coming home when I was processing this weed in the afternoon, and I didn't clean out the blender. Relevant, because the next morning, when my parents got up and I turned on the oven, threw some bacon in, and thought, well, I'll make you some pancakes and bacon, and proceeded to whip up my pancake mix in the blender, which had a significant amount of cannabis residue in it. And to this day, I will never forget where the breakfast is being served. My dad, who was kind of a picky eater and always let us know how he felt about something that was wrong at dinner or at breakfast or whatever the meal was. There we were. I'd served the bacon, I think made some eggs as well, threw the pancakes on, maple syrup was on the table. And my dad turns to me and said, Gary, what's all the green dots in the pancakes? I wish I could say that I came up with a really witty reply that immediately suspended that, but I was frankly so blown away that I had forgotten about the fact that I'd done a bunch of cannabis in the blender before making the pancakes. I think I just met him with a dumb stare and da-da-da-da-da. And I don't think he ever ate any of my pancakes again. So remember, if you do ever process any cannabis in any of your kitchen utensils, and you are having some visitors over that you don't want to know about your cannabis consumption, you should probably clean it. If there is ever anything you hear on the Cannabis Podcast you'd like to comment on, please do so to info@cannabispodcast.com. Same thing if you ever have a suggestion for someone who should be interviewed. I'd love to hear about it. And you can always find the links to anything that gets talked about on the Cannabis Podcast back at cannabispodcast.com. Newly refreshed, so it shouldn't take so long to load, and easier access to all the various episodes. That wraps it up for episode 70 of the Cannabis Podcast.
From the cannabis-infused studio, high above the Okanagan Valley, this was the Cannabis Podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
How do cannabis CEOs balance growth and optimization strategies? What is THCO, Delta-10, and CBNA, and why should you care about these minor cannabinoids? And why is an endocannabinoid system covered in medical school? Most people think they're up to date in trends in the cannabis industry, but they're about 6 weeks behind. Learn about what is truly next in the cannabis space by joining myself, Brian Fields, and Kellen Finney every week on the Dime Podcast and, of course, on PodConnects.